Imagine a place where the sky rains blood and the mountains are built from the bodies of the dead, where the sun might burn black in a white sky and the ground can scream when you walk on it. A nightmare made real. Welcome to a demon world. In the Warhammer 40,000 universe, these are actual planets twisted by the warp, the chaotic dimension of demons and dark gods. They are not metaphorical hells, they are literal hell planets. And for countless poor souls, they're home. So, what is a demon world? It's a planet that has been utterly consumed and reshaped by chaos. Think of a world dragged into a warp storm and suffused with demonic energy until reality itself starts to break. Physics? Out the window. Geography? Completely bonkers. One demon world might be a flat disk floating in space. Another could be a giant spiral stairway coiling into the sky. Day and night, up and down. These things don't always work right. A demon world is governed not by nature's laws, but by the fickle whims of dark gods and the nightmares of the beings that live there. It's every sin, fear, and desire of the human psyche made real, carved into the landscape. In short, a demon world is what you get when hell decides to settle in and start a family. Origins, how hell comes to be. Most demon worlds were once normal planets. Some were even beautiful, before chaos claimed them. Picture an idyllic world of forests and cities, suddenly engulfed by a warp rift, a tear in reality. In an instant, everything real about that planet is overwritten by pure madness. Perhaps it was an unlucky colony in the wrong place, or an ancient world that got sucked into the warp ages ago. The Eye of Terror is the most infamous region for this. A huge warp storm where whole star systems have been trapped since time immemorial. Inside the Eye, and similar warp rifts like the Maelstrom, demon worlds abound. Some used to be Eldar planets, human colonies, or anything else, now frozen in a state of chaotic flux. Once a world falls to chaos, it becomes a permanent beachhead for the dark powers. Demons can come and go freely from it, as if the planet was an extension of the Immaterium, the warp, itself. Imperial scholars classify it as Perdita, lost forever. The only permanent residents now are those claimed by chaos, mortal servants, insane survivors, and demonic entities that call it home. Who's in charge here? Typically, a demon world ends up with a ruler, usually a demon prince. A demon prince is a once mortal champion who sold their soul for godlike power and got promoted into a demon. When one of these conquers a world, or when a world falls into the warp with them on it, their patron chaos god rewards them by giving them the whole planet as a personal playground. Nice gift, right? Conquer a planet for your dark god and you get to keep it. Immediately, the demon prince will use their unholy powers to refashion the world however they please. Because on a demon world, willpower shapes reality. If the new ruler wants mountains of skulls or rivers of poison, reality itself bends to accommodate. Every demon world is thus unique, reflecting the twisted vision of its master. One may be an endless battlefield drenched in blood. Another might be a carnival of depravity and distorted pleasures. Yet another, a labyrinth of nightmares and shifting illusions. Whatever the case, you can bet it's tailored to the aesthetic of whichever chaos god rules there. However, it's not always one big happy fiefdom. The four chaos gods, Khorne, Nurgle, Tzench, and Slaanesh, constantly fight over territory in the warp. And demon worlds are prime real estate. They're like prized properties on a demonic monopoly board, and all the gods want to plant their flag. Armies of demons and corrupted warriors clash endlessly on these planets, each side trying to claim the world for their patron. These wars can rage for centuries. time is weird in the warp. We'll get to that. Turning entire planets into colossal battle arenas. Imagine war so prolonged that literally the entire planet becomes a scarred battlefield, piled with the debris and corpses of hundreds of years of fighting. That's a demon world in the midst of negotiating new ownership. The Chaos Gods themselves don't usually step in personally. They're like spectators enjoying the show. Instead, they send their greater demons and favored champions as generals to do the dirty work. It's all a grand, bloody contest of bragging rights among evil gods. And when one side finally wins, the world changes hands and likely gets remodeled again by the next demon prince in charge. On these worlds, conquest is a way of unlife, a world of endless war. Many demon worlds never truly know peace. They're war-torn forever. Picture living in a place where the concept of peacetime simply doesn't exist. For example, there are planets where rival demon armies literally take turns raising and conquering regions back and forth in an eternal game of one-upmanship for their gods. A fortress you built from the bones of your enemies today might be blown apart tomorrow by someone else who then uses your bones to build their fort. And so it goes, round and round. On some worlds, the moment one war ends, another begins, or the victors start fighting each other the second the external enemy is gone. If Khorne, the god of war, has his way, the fighting never stops. Every drop of blood spilled pleases him. In fact, some demon worlds are basically gigantic gladiatorial pits built to entertain Khorne. We'll come back to that horror in a minute. But war isn't the only state of existence on these planets. Let's say a particular demon prince has firmly secured their world for now. What is life like under their rule? To answer that, we need to talk about the different flavors of demon worlds, because life can vary dramatically depending on which Chaos God holds sway. So, steel yourself. We're going to take a little guided tour through these paradise destinations. Bring a raincoat, preferably one that does acid-proof. Khorne's Dominion. Planets of unending battle. First stop, the realms of Khorne. Khorne is the blood god, the chaos god of war, murder, and primal violence. Imagine a world dedicated to Khorne's ideals. It's exactly as awful as you think, and then some. One such planet, called Drakaasi, among others, is essentially a never-ending coliseum. Its oceans? A sea of blood. Yes, literally an ocean filled with blood, connecting shattered continents like a crimson highway. Scattered along these shores are cities built for war. In one city, every building might be an arena, and thousands of gladiators spill their guts in daily spectacles to honor the blood god. In another city, everything is made of cracked red crystal that hums with war chants, and the whole place literally sings a droning battle hymn day and night. There might be a city that's nothing more than a gigantic battlefield. No marketplaces, no homes, just rusted weapons littering the ground and warriors clashing in an endless loop. There could even be a city built in a vast graveyard of giant bones, where people have made huts and halls out of the rib cages of titanic slain monsters. Whatever the form, each settlement venerates war in its own way. On a Khorne demon world, everything revolves around violence. Society, if you can call it that, on a Khorne world is brutally simple. The strong rule, the weak get sacrificed, often literally. The population is usually a mix of human or mutant warriors, Chaos Space Marines who've pledged to Khorne, and actual demons prowling about, all blood-crazed and eager to fight. Any kind of hierarchy probably changes by the hour as challengers constantly try to kill their leaders. If you're a mortal living here, the only way to survive is to become a killer among killers. Children raised on these worlds learn to fight as soon as they can hold a blade. If they don't, they probably won't live long enough to see adulthood. Law and order are essentially might makes right. But if there's one law, it's absolute devotion to Horn. People offer skulls, taken from their victims, to add to Horn's great skull throne. They hold massive war feasts after battles. Imagine a cannibalistic victory party around a lake of blood, toasting their god with chalices of hot gore. It's grotesque, yes, but to them it's just a normal Tuesday night. One might wonder, do these people do anything other than fight? Well, they do raid other worlds, got to import fresh skulls and slaves when local supplies run low. Slaves on a Khorne world have a very short and unpleasant life. Enslaved captives are typically forced to fight in the arenas for the amusement of their captors or used as living training dummies in martial practices. If you're lucky, you might just be used to sharpen someone's axe and then thrown into the blood pits. If you're unlucky, you could find yourself tied to an altar while a crazed priest drenches you in the blood of the last victim, all as part of a ritual to summon more demons or just to please Khorne's bloodlust. And after all that, your heart might get eaten by the victor. The concept of day-to-day life here is essentially battle prep in the morning, a good honest slaughter by midday, and maybe a celebratory bloodbath at night. Rinse in blood and repeat. Amazingly, from their perspective, this is glorious. Khorne's followers want this life. They see it as honorable and exalted. Dying in battle is the best death imaginable for them, so even the fear of death doesn't hold civilization together in the usual way. Cowardice is the worst sin. So if you somehow ended up on a Khorne demon planet and didn't have the decency to be a psychotic berserker, you'd better hide real well. And frankly, there's nowhere to hide for long. Even the environment will betray you. The forests, if any, might literally be carnivorous or made of brass razor wire that cuts you as you run. You might try to cower in a cave, only to find the cave walls start bleeding or demon hounds sniff you out. There's no peace to be had. The best you can hope for is to die quickly, and Khorne's servants are happy to oblige. Nurgle's garden life in decay. Next, let's visit the realm of Nurgle, the plague god. Nurgle is the chaos god of disease, decay, and also a sort of twisted, stagnant life. He represents the inevitability of death and rot, but also oddly the comfort of acceptance. Grandfather Nurgle's embrace, as his cultists say. A demon world of Nurgle is basically a pestilential swamp from hell. Think fetid bogs and rotten forests under a sickly greenish sky. The air is a cloud of spores and flies. The water, if you dare call it water, is sludge teeming with parasites. The smell, well, let's just say even describing it would violate several health codes. This is a place where everything is infected with something. The forests are alive, but in a grotesque way. Trees slough foul slime and have branches like contorted limbs. Mushrooms the size of houses puff out clouds of contagion. The wildlife, if any, is mutated and horrifying. Picture giant bloated insects, plague-ridden beasts that shouldn't even be alive, but somehow are, dragging their rotten carcasses around, eternally spreading filth. Now, you might assume nobody could live in such a place, but oh, they do. In fact, millions live on some of Nurgle's worlds, though live might be a generous term. They endure. How? Largely by the grace of Nurgle. See, Nurgle's weird shtick is that those who give in and accept his diseases are often granted a perverse form of immunity. Not immunity from pain or deformity. Oh no, you'll still cough up your liquefied organs, but immunity from death by those diseases, at least for a long while. People on a Nurgle-aligned demon planet often become walking corpses that refuse to lie down. They will rot. Parts of them will drop off. They'll be covered in boils and fungus, yet they continue shuffling around, feeling oddly cheerful thanks to Nurgle's corrosive joy. There's a genuine phenomenon where Nurgle's followers experience a kind of euphoric delirium, a grandfatherly comfort in the midst of their decay. It's as if extreme sickness becomes normal and even pleasant to them. Their senses of pain or disgust are dulled or twisted into enjoyment. Outsiders would be gagging at the stench, while the locals smile with foul teeth, welcoming them with open, maggoty arms. Literally, open arms, maybe falling off the sockets. What does society look like in a plague nightmare? It can be surprisingly structured in a grotesque parody of a feudal system. Take the plague planet, realm of the demon Primarch Mortarion, and his Death Guard Legion. There, mortal humans eke out a meager existence in tiny villages huddled in the less deadly valleys, while their immortal Chaos Space Marine overlords rule from towering fortress citadels high in the toxic mountains. Those fortresses belch smoke and plague into the sky. They're part fortress, part disease factory. From time to time, the lords, the Death Guard Marines, or plague sorcerers, might descend to test some new concocted virus on the villagers, or to conscript the strongest of them for some warband. The villagers, for their part, pray to Nurgle with fervent desperation. They beg for his gifts, which means even worse diseases, because ironically, that's the only way they feel he notices them. It's tragic. These people have been so utterly broken that they want more sickness, just for a chance at a bit of Nurgle's favor or relief from the agony of the last disease. Sometimes he alleviates one disease by giving a new one. Everyday life on such a world might involve constant cycles of sickness and bizarre regeneration. There are accounts of Nurgle's victims whose limbs literally rot off over a week, only to regrow the next, and then rot off again over and over. One world's populace was blessed with a cycle where, for 8 months of the year, their arms and legs fall off one by one, then slowly grow back. But in the 9th month, the regrown limbs swell into grotesque, tumor-filled caricatures and finally explode, showering everyone with pus and contagion. Those people considered this normal, a part of their calendar. If someone's limbs didn't grow back with bulbous boils ready to burst, they'd probably think Nurgle had forsaken them. Horrifying, yes, but this is the norm under Nurgle's care. Socially, besides the ever-present diseases, Nurgle's worlds often feature a lot of twisted community spirit. Grandfather Nurgle loves family in a sick way, so his followers often live in communal groups sharing everything, including infections. They sing jovial plague hymns, stir giant cauldrons of rancid stew, don't ask what's in it, and enthusiastically spread sickness to newcomers as a gift. If someone new arrives on a Nurgle demon world, the locals might genuinely greet them with smiles and immediately infect them, for their own good, of course, so that they too can be blessed and survive the planet's ambient diseases. Resisting these gifts is a fast way to become an outcast or get killed, and your corpse will just become another fertilizer pile for the mushroom forests. Despite all this, life under Nurgle isn't 100% suffering 100% of the time. That's the ironic part. Nurgle's power dulls the pain and fear, so people feel kinda okay with their lot. The emotional state on a plague world might be strangely upbeat, lots of dark humor, folks laughing off things that would make a medicized officer scream, people helping each other endure the latest pox with a grin. There's a grim camaraderie in decay. Of course, if you're not under Nurgle's spell, it's absolute hell on earth. Imagine having every disease at once, while around you a bunch of lunatics are giggling and calling it a blessing. But from the inside, they might even call it home sweet home. Emphasis on the sweet, as the air smells like rot and sugar mixed together. sentient realm, the crazy maze of change. Now hold on to your mind, because we arrive at a Tsinchian demon world. Tsinch is the chaos god of change, magic, and devious scheming. If you thought the other worlds were unpredictable, a Tsinch-dominated world makes them look tame. The hallmark of Tsinch is constant change. Nothing stays stable. So imagine a planet where the landscape is in flux like a fever dream. Mountains melt into valleys when you're not looking. Forests morph into crystal towers. By the next morning, the sky changes color, and even the number of moons or suns could vary day to day. On one known Tsinch-daemon world, there's an ever-shifting labyrinth of helical platforms and impossible staircases that literally spiral around any newcomers. So you walk up a stair, and suddenly it twists you upside down, and now you're underground. Except now, that is the new sky. There are rainstorms of liquid magma that fall in precise patterns, probably spelling out some eldritch rune only a sorcerer understands. Rivers of raw magical energy cut across the land, glowing with all colors at once. It's mind-boggling, in the truest sense. Your mind just cannot fully comprehend the geography, and that's intentional. Tsinch's realm is designed to confuse, to defy logic, to make you question reality right before reality turns you into a spawn because you touch the wrong glowing mushroom. What's it like to live here? Well, for mortals, it's a bit like being a rat in a wizard's laboratory. At any moment, something might transmute you into a candle or a pile of goo just because someone cast a spell and you were in the blast radius. The key inhabitants on Tsinchi worlds are often sorcerers and their followers. A prime example is the planet of the sorcerers, also called Sortiarius, home of the Thousand Suns, Legion of Chaos, Space Marines. That world is a surreal, darkly beautiful hellscape of volcanic plains, floating islands, and towering sorceress spires. The Thousand Suns, being great magic users, have put up spells to protect their territory, so their city of sorcerers stands tall amid the chaos. Giant black towers, constantly shifting architecture. One day, a tower might grow an extra wing or rearrange its halls by itself. Libraries of forbidden lore line the insides of pyramids that might also be alive in some way. If you're a servant in that city, your daily routine might involve dusting grimoires that whisper to you, or feeding strange magical familiars that skitter in the halls. Outside the sorcerer citadels, there are nomadic warbands of mutants and rogue psykers roaming the shifting wilderness. Some are escaped slaves from the sorcerers, trying to carve out their own little corner of the planet. They might form tribes led by the biggest psychic powerhouse among them. These poor souls have to navigate a land that literally wants to trick them. You might set up camp by a pleasant oasis one night and wake up to find your camp now sits in the middle of a carnivorous crystal garden that wasn't there before. Oops. Or maybe the oasis itself was a mirage, and you actually slept inside the gullet of a giant warp beast. Surprise, you're digesting. Paranoia is survival here. Everything could be a trap or an illusion conjured by Tsientich's minions. Even time can loop or jump unpredictably. You wander for an hour and find 10 years have passed, or vice versa. Society on these worlds tends to be a megacracy, ruled by the powerful magisters. Knowledge is power, literally, so those with arcane skill dominate. For the average person, life might involve servitude to a wizard, hoping he doesn't turn you into a flailing mutant if you disappoint him. If you do well, maybe he'll imbue you with a bit of sorceress energy and make you a thrall wizard. Basically, an apprentice who's bound to his will. If you're not serving a sorcerer, you might join a mutant cult. There are lots of cults wandering around, each with their own crazy beliefs. If we follow the great flaming owl in the sky, it will lead us to paradise. That kind of thing. These cults often fight each other or get scooped up as pawns in some grand spell by a more powerful being. Life here is dangerous, yes, but interestingly, some inhabitants thrive on the change. Tsinch's devoted actually enjoy the unpredictability. Every day brings new wonders and terrors to puzzle over. They pride themselves on cunning and foresight, so a common attitude is, if you survive, it means you were clever enough or fated to. There's a constant game of intrigue even at the peasant level. People form alliances, betray each other, mutate, then form new alliances based on who has grown what tentacles this week. It's exhausting for any normal person, but to them it's just life in the kaleidoscope. You'll often find those who live long here are either a little bit psychic or have some innate warp-touched quirk. Basically, the crazier or more cunning you already are, the better your chances. One more thing. Tsinchian worlds are crawling with demons too, especially ones like flamers, fire-spitting gibbering things, or mystical construct creatures. In a twisted way, demons might even fill the ecological niches. Flocks of disc-shaped screeching demons swirl through the skies like predatory birds. Packs of slithering tentacled horrors slink in the shadows like wolves. So not only might the river suddenly turn to acid, but also a pack of gleeful warp predators might decide you look fun to disembowel. If you're extraordinarily lucky, or have a patron, you might convince or compel a demon to serve you or guard your village. Some warlords do manage to make pacts, but such bargains often end poorly. The demon obeys until one day it decides to twist your wish, or simply gets bored and eats your face. Nothing personal, just demon things. Slaanesh's paradise of excess. Finally, let's take an uneasy stroll through a Slaaneshi demon world. Slaanesh is the chaos god of excess, pleasure, pain, and perfection in all things hedonistic. In many ways, a Slaaneshi world is the most seductive and also the most perverse. Outwardly, some areas of such a planet might look astonishingly beautiful, breathtaking palaces, gardens of alien flora under a vivid, unreal sunset, music perpetually playing on the wind. But every bit of beauty has a knife's edge. The palaces might be built of living flesh. The garden's flowers might exude narcotic pollen that ensnares your mind. And the music in the air is the screams of the damned harmonized into symphonies. It's all about temptation and sensation. One infamous example, the city of Charybdia on the demon world Torvendis. It was a huge metropolis where millions of humans lived only to worship Slaanesh. Imagine a city bigger than any hive, where every street is lined with decadence. The rulers, like the demon princess Lady Charybdia, threw endless festivals of indulgence. The citizens would partake in feasts that make imperial nobles look like paupers. Tables of rich, bizarre foods, some of which might still be alive on your plate. Fountains flowing with intoxicating liquids, and everywhere you look, there are performances. Dancers contorting in impossible ways. Masked cultists engaged in what we'll politely call extreme communal activities in the plazas. And artists crafting sculptures that literally hurt to gaze upon. Perhaps because they're made of people fused together in artistic agony. Life in a Slaaneshi city is a constant pursuit of more. More pleasure, more sensation, more extremes. The thing about Slaanesh is that ordinary pleasures dull quickly, so his devotees push boundaries to feel anything at all. That means a citizen might start their week with simple joys, luxurious baths, fine music. But by the week's end, they've graduated to flaying their own skin just to feel a new thrill or taking a cocktail of insane drugs to experience vivid hallucinations or participating in orgies of violence and pleasure combined. The line between pain and pleasure blurs completely. Many inhabitants are literally addicted to sensation. They'll do absolutely anything for a new high. Imagine a society where the greatest status symbol is having experienced the most outrageous, dangerous indulgences and survived. People one-up each other. Oh, you enjoyed a dinner of live fire snake last night? Child's play. I had my nerves rewired so I could taste music and hear colors. That's living. Of course, this cannot be sustained. Mortal bodies and minds have limits. On a demon world of Slaanesh, those limits are routinely broken. Most people eventually either die from excess or mutate wildly, because Slaanesh is generous in blessing those who chase extremes. You might grow extra sensitive nerve endings all over your skin, so even a breeze feels like ecstasy or agony. Or your eyes might mutate to see into the ultraviolet, driving you mad with new colors. Some get turned into mindless spawn after experiencing one too many warp-fueled narcotics. But the population is replenished by a steady stream of enslaved captives and cult-born offspring, plus whoever Slaanesh's raiders drag in from other worlds. There are always new playthings to keep the party going. Now, not everyone is dining on ambrosia and listening to demonic harpists all day. There's a darker side, as if that wasn't dark enough. The underclass of a Slaaneshi world. The slaves and unfortunates who aren't invited to the palace balls, except maybe as refreshments. These individuals live a life of terror. They serve the whims of the decadent nobility and demonic courtiers. One wrong move and you might become the next centerpiece in a torture art installation. Perhaps you're a servant whose tongue was removed, so you can't scream when the master's guests decide to use you as a human instrument, strumming your exposed nerves to produce music. Yes, it's that horrifying. Slaanesh's realm can be beautiful, but it's an awful, predatory beauty. The powerful derive pleasure from the suffering of the powerless, and sometimes the powerless are simply ground up, figuratively or literally, to spice up the next experience for the elite. Despite this, some mortals on these worlds willingly join the cycle because they too want to ascend to that ecstasy. It's a cycle of abuse and aspiration. Today's victim hopes to become tomorrow's victor, inflicting even worse on someone else. And it does happen. Perhaps a particularly cunning or charismatic slave manages to attract a patron's favor, gets augmented or taught forbidden secrets, and rises to become a new cult leader. Social mobility through depravity. They'll then exact revenge on those who wronged them and take their place in the pecking order of indulgence. Such dramas are common because Slaanesh loves passion in all forms, including vengeance, ambition, and tragic downfall. A perfectly melodramatic betrayal or heartbreak, delicious to Slaanesh. To an outsider, a Slaaneshi demon world is maybe the most disorienting of all. On the surface, parts of it might look welcoming. Lush gardens, golden spires, soft laughter on the wind. But step inside and you'll quickly realize you're in a literal slaughterhouse of souls wearing a thin veneer of glamour. It's the ultimate trap. You want to indulge because everything is made to appeal to your desires, whatever they are, food, flesh, power, art, comfort. Slaanesh has it all on offer. But once you take a bite, you're on the path to damnation, and you likely won't even want to leave. The normal life is anything mundane on a demon world. With all this insanity, eternal war, disease, mutation, hedonism, one might wonder if there's any semblance of ordinary life on these worlds. Do people farm? Do they raise families? Do they have, Emperor forbid, a day job? The answer, kind of yes, in a twisted fashion. People are remarkably adaptable, or perhaps warped, and will try to continue basic living activities even in hell. On some demon worlds, especially those long isolated from the wider galaxy, the inhabitants don't even fully grasp that they're living in an abnormal place. This is their normal. They might till fields, except the fields are ash wastes where they harvest fungus or weird crystallized warp stuff instead of wheat. They might trade in markets trading slaves, body parts, or strange reagents rather than honest goods. A herdsman might graze a flock of mutant beasts on the toxic plains. A hunter might set out to catch some of the smaller demonic critters for food. Imagine having to figure out how to cook a warp-spawned creature safely. Trial and fatal error. Families do exist in the sense of bloodlines or clans. In a chaos-tainted way, they often form cults. For instance, a village on a demon world could essentially be one extended clan, all worshipping the same chaos power in their own way, interbreeding, mutating over generations to better survive local conditions. It's not a healthy nuclear family environment, but they may have bonds of loyalty and kinship. Grandpa has three heads and eats raw flesh, but he's our three-headed grandpa. That sort of thing. There are even tasks that pass for jobs. On a cornate world, your job might be armorer, constantly forging weapons from scrap and bone. Or perhaps corpse cleaner, heaping the dead into offerings. On a Nurglite world, you could be a gardener tending the pus fens, ensuring the sacred plagues spread properly. On a Slanchy world, you might be an artist slave charged with coming up with new entertainments under pain of death. Invent a new sensation by midnight or suffer. On a Zenchian world, maybe you're a scribe recording constantly changing prophecies, even though the pages you wrote yesterday have rearranged themselves by morning. Payment for these jobs is not credits, obviously. It could be survival rations. A dose of the local narcotic to which you're addicted, a temporary reprieve from being sacrificed, or if you're high ranking, maybe some mutant privileges like better living quarters, in a tower that might not dissolve on a whim. Religion and worship. One universal aspect of life on any demon world is worship. These worlds are drenched in the power of the chaos gods, and their inhabitants, if they want to live, usually must pay homage. Organized religion on a demon planet is a very real and daily affair. Skip the local worship ceremony and you might find yourself on the altar as the next offering. There are often huge temples, cathedrals, or circles of standing stones. Whatever suits the god's style, where regular masses are held. For chaos undivided worlds, where all gods are revered in some form, these could be grand cathedrals honoring chaos as a whole pantheon. For single god worlds, every settlement likely has a shrine to that god. And unlike the remote, abstract deity of some imperial cult, here the gods definitely hear you. In fact, a priest on a demon world might literally be possessed by a minor demon mid-ritual to convey the god's will directly to the congregation. Talk about a fiery sermon. So picture the scene. It's evening. You've managed to survive another hellish day. Now you and the others of your community shuffle into the grand temple made of bone and brass, if it's corn, or slime-drenched wood, if Nurgle, or prismatic glass, if Tzench, or marble and living flesh, if Slaanesh. The priest, who might have once been human but now has glowing eyes and speaks with a dozen voices, leads the prayers. Everyone chants, screams, or sings. Styles vary. Korn's congregation might howl blood chants, Slaanesh's might have an eerie chorus, etc. Maybe there's a sacrifice. Often there is. If someone broke the rules or just drew the short straw, they're ritually killed in front of the crowd to please the god. Strangely, this is just part of life. People might be frightened, yes, but they also genuinely believe that without these rites, the god's favor will fade and things will get even worse. And on a demon world, that's probably true. If the locals stop worshiping, the god might withdraw some protection. And then rival powers or free-roaming demons could move in and really ruin their day. So even if you secretly hate it, you participate. Compliance is survival. Changes in leadership, a world in flux. Life on a demon planet can drastically change if and when power shifts. Remember those constant wars and rivalries? Let's say you've been scraping by under the rule of a Nurgle demon prince, but suddenly a big scary corn champion and his legion of bloodletters come rampaging through and overthrow him. Overnight, your entire world's theme flips from rot to rage. What happens to you, a lowly mortal? Probably nothing good. Maybe Khorne's new regime just slaughters every Nurgle-aligned survivor they find. Skulls for the Skull Throne. Or, if you quickly swear loyalty to Khorne, you might be spared only to be thrown into the fighting pits to prove that loyalty. Similarly, if a Slaanesi warband conquers a formerly neutral world, they might enslave the population for labor and pleasure, turning your once relatively quiet village life into a non-stop orgy of forced celebrations, horrific ones. Thus, the fortunes of inhabitants rise and fall on the whims of distant gods and their champion du jour. One account from the novel Demon World describes tribes of humans on Torvendis who had to adapt to a succession of different monstrous rulers. Khorne demons one century, then a crazy mutant cult, then a Slaanesi princess with her hedonistic city. Each era demanded different forms of servitude and worship from the people. It's like living in a kingdom that changes its state, religion, and laws every generation, except each new regime is an inhuman horror with completely alien demands. Little wonder that the folk wisdom on demon worlds is basically pray to all the gods just in case and be ready to switch allegiances at the drop of a hat or drop of blood. Not all equal. Some places are worse than others. While it's true that any demon world is a terrible place by normal standards, there's actually a spectrum. A planet firmly controlled by one chaos faction might be relatively more stable, in its own twisted way, than a world where multiple powers constantly clash. For example, a chaos space marine homeworld, demon planet like Medrengard, Perturabo's Iron Warrior's fortress world, or Sicarus, the Word-Bearer's cathedral world, tends to be run with an iron fist. On Medrengard, the landscape is said to be a nightmare of fortifications, entire continents turned into black iron citadels and forge complexes, the sky ashy and dark. The human population there are slaves who toil to build ever more obscene defenses and war machines for their masters. It's a harsh existence, but oddly, one might say it's predictably harsh. The Iron Warriors aren't whimsical, they're brutal but methodical. If you keep your head down and make yourself useful, for example, laboring in the demon forges, mining raw materials from the living rock that screams, yes, the cliffs might actually scream as you mine them, you might live. Of course, you'll be worked to death eventually, or sacrificed to power a demon engine. But hey, at least you know what each day entails. Hard labor, gruel, lashings from overseers, and the distant screams of unfortunate victims. Very 9-to-5 in its way. Compare that to a place like Temporia, a Zenchayan realm of utter unpredictability, where you have no routine at all because reality won't stay put long enough. In a perverse sense, the devil you know is better. Structured misery can be easier to handle than absolute chaos. Surviving and coping. Let's say you, a hypothetical average human, are trapped on a demon world and somehow haven't died immediately. How do you cope? The honest answer, most don't. Only the strongest, physically and mentally, or the most corrupted can truly survive long term. But there are a few paths. Assimilation. You give in. You join a cult, swear yourself to the local power, and embrace the madness. This often actually improves your chances. If you prove useful to the ruling demons or warlords, they might keep you around. You'll probably have to do horrible things, kill on command, partake in vile rituals. maybe allow some mutations to take hold, but you'll be alive. Over time, you might even convince yourself you like it. Many humans on demon worlds survive by this route. They become part of the evil, basically. They start as prey and end up as predators, or at least accomplices to predators. It's that or remain prey forever, hiding and scavenging. On the fringes, some small groups try to hide from all sides. Imagine a tiny pocket of relative sanity, maybe a few families hiding in a cave system, or a remote mountain where the warp is slightly less intense. They might avoid using obvious technology or warp energy to stay off the radar of demons. These people live off fungi, small vermin, whatever water they can filter from toxic rain, a truly miserable existence, but perhaps free from immediate demonic torment. They likely live in constant fear, whispering old prayers to the Emperor or any god that might listen from outside the warp. Sadly, their isolation often can't last. Eventually, a warband stumbles on them, or a wandering daemon sniffs them out. But a rare few might endure for generations by staying low and making no noise. You won't find many heroes in these groups. It's mostly terrified survivors doing anything to protect their children and not draw attention. Bargains and trickery. Some individuals try to play the various chaos forces against each other. Maybe you convince a lesser demon that you're more useful alive as a guide or jester. Or you play two rival cults off so they think you're spying on the other, keeping you alive as a double agent. It's a dangerous game. One misstep and you'll be a smear on the wall. But in a place filled with schemers, sometimes a cunning mortal can survive by being even sneakier. You might even earn a measure of respect for your guile, especially under Tsench's nose. Of course, the end result of this path is often that you yourself become corrupted by the endless lies and deals until you're basically one of them. Sheer will or luck until rescue. There are exceptionally rare cases of people who simply endure on grit and luck long enough to be rescued or escape. Perhaps an Imperial expedition or an Inquisitor briefly penetrates the demon world and pulls out a survivor. Or the warp storms shift and spit the person back into real space after what felt like decades or seconds in hell. Those stories are few and miraculous. Anyone who goes through that is changed forever. They might be physically scarred, mutated, or just deeply traumatized. Many of these survivors are borderline insane from what they've witnessed, haunted by nightmares, literal and figurative. The Imperium, if it finds such a person, will quarantine them thoroughly. You'd spend the rest of your life under inquisitorial watch, being tested for corruption. Some of these survivors, however, prove incredibly valuable. They have knowledge about chaos that few do, and a sixth sense for the warp's presence. Inquisitors have been known to use them as advisors, albeit on a tight leash. They tend to be dark-humored individuals, understandably, with a penchant for grim sarcasm and fatalism. Honestly, after seeing a demon world firsthand, who could blame them? The warp's funny business, time and reality. One more thing to note about life on a demon world. The passage of time and the stability of reality itself are notoriously unreliable. You could be born, live, and die on one of these planets while only a few years pass in the outside galaxy, or vice versa. There are stories of Imperial troops who briefly set foot on a demon planet and fell back, only to find that centuries had passed when they returned to their ship. Conversely, some people escape thinking they were inside for years, only to realize it was just an hour outside, or sometimes they come out before they even went in. Wrap your head around that. Causality can loop or break in warped places. For inhabitants, this means concepts like history and planning are tricky. If the sun rises and sets, it might not do so in 24-hour cycles. A year might be a meaningless term. People might mark time by events instead. It's been 3 blood rains since the last demon raid, or the moon has turned green since my child was born. Aging might also be skewed. Some might not age at all while the warp sustains them or mutates them. Others wither quickly. This makes life even more surreal. Imagine a father and son in a village. One day, a warp surge hits the area. Afterwards, the son is suddenly older than the father because time flowed differently around him. Such things can happen. The world itself might rewind or repeat certain days, especially in Zench's domain, where reality might reset to mess with you. So the psychological toll is immense. Mortals cope by either attributing it all to the gods bless us with an extra long harvest season, an excuse when time dilates, for example, or by simply not noticing due to their already fractured sanity. Leaving the planet. Not so simple. For most denizens, leaving a demon world is only a dream, and most likely a nightmare one at that. The warp surrounds these worlds like a stormy sea around a deadly island. Spaceships can rarely approach safely. If you're on the planet, you probably don't have a spaceship anyway, or even know what one is if generations have passed. Some Chaos Lords do have void ships. The Chaos Marines, for instance, launch raids from their planets. But if you're a random human serf, convincing your Chaos Overlord to give you a lift off-world isn't going to happen, unless it's to drop you as an expendable cultist in a battle somewhere else, which is not better. Escape is more likely to come from a lucky warp anomaly. Perhaps a portal briefly opens. Even then, stepping through a random warp portal is a gamble. You might end up in an even worse situation, like, say, appearing in the middle of open space without a suit. Yikes. For the vast majority, once you're stuck there, that's it. You're living and dying in hell. This finality actually contributes to how cultures develop on these planets. Many inhabitants don't even realize there's an outside galaxy anymore. They may have legends of a different time, like our ancestors came from the stars, guided by the false emperor, but the gods punished them, that sort of myth. Or they might think the entire universe is like their world. If a demon world has had no visitors for millennia, its people could truly believe the sky everywhere rains blood, or that demons are just a fact of life on every planet. Their worldview is completely enclosed by the warp's influence. Perspective. One person's hell is another's heaven. As utterly depraved as these worlds are, it's fascinating and horrifying to consider that to their denizens, this is normal. From a neutral observer standpoint, say an inquisitorial scholar documenting these accounts, you can't help a bitter, dark chuckle at some descriptions. For instance, some natives of demon worlds apparently don't understand why off-worlders make such a fuss. Doesn't your sky bleed occasionally? Don't your trees try to eat you? No. How boring. They might find our worlds unbelievable. No daily mutations, no insane blood sports, just people living mundane lives. They might pity us for our lack of gifts from the gods. It's all relative, in a twisted way. Chaos has a way of not only twisting flesh and land, but minds. Many of those born and raised in these hells are effectively brainwashed by their reality. They can't see their situation as wrong or abnormal. It simply is. They worship chaos because that's what everyone they've ever known does. They fear and obey the local demons because those are the authorities of the world. If by some miracle you plucked a young person out of a demon world and showed them an imperial civilized planet, they'd likely consider it terribly dull and lacking. No daily terror. How do these people live without constant adrenaline and the voice of a god whispering in their ear? Of course, after a while, they might realize life expectancy here is better than 15 and horribly dead. But the conditioning runs deep. Closing thoughts. Home sweet hell. Life on a demon world is a study in extremes. It magnifies every dark facet of existence and obliterates most good. Yet, it is life of a sort. Life finds a way to continue, mutated, tortured, and mad, but alive. Communities form, beliefs take root, people laugh at very strange things, and cry, blood often, and persevere in hopes that tomorrow might bring something worse or better, who knows? Hope on a demon world is a dangerous thing, usually crushed swiftly. But ironically, chaos itself promises hope to its followers. False hope, but hope nonetheless. Khorne promises victory and strength. Nurgle promises endurance and rebirth through rot. Zentach promises knowledge and change. Slaanesh promises joy and fulfillment. Those promises keep the inhabitants going, keep them loyal, even happy in their bizarre way. For an outside observer, it's easy to say these worlds are nothing but hellish cesspools to be avoided, or blasted if we could. The Imperium, whenever it discovers a demon-tainted planet, will quarantine it heavily. They know there's usually no saving it. Only the Emperor's mercy via orbital bombardment could be a release. And often even that isn't possible because the planet might not stay in real space consistently to target. So these worlds fester, out of sight, out of mind, until some horror emerges from them to remind the galaxy that yes, things can always get worse. In the end, a demon world is perhaps the ultimate nightmare of the 41st millennium. A place where not only are your enemies demonic, but the air, the ground, your own mind might turn on you. It's the ultimate culmination of what chaos wants to do to reality. And unfortunately for many, it's reality already. So the next time you complain about your lousy Hive City hab block or your Death World jungle assignment, just remember, somewhere out there is a poor fool who has to reassemble his own dismembered body every morning because the night's horrors tore it apart. And he'll do it again and again, forever, on a demon planet that will never let him die or escape. Compared to that, even the grim darkness of normal life in the far future might just be a cakewalk. Conclusion. In summary, life on a demon world is life turned inside out. It's cruel, bizarre, and often short for those who aren't utterly corrupted. It's a study in how low sentient existence can sink when literally hell is given free rein. Yet amid the terror and madness, there are stories of people who adapt, societies that develop in the cracks of chaos, and survivors who crawl out to tell the tale. These worlds are a testament to chaos's power and the suffering it brings. Twisted reflections of what once might have been ordinary planets. They stand as warnings, too. This is what happens when the warp completely consumes a world. No matter how bad things get in the Imperium, you can always say, at least we're not on a demon world. And if you are on a demon world, well, Emperor help you, though he probably can't reach there. In that case, maybe the only solace is that phrase whispered by those survivors with the bitter grins. The lucky ones died quick. Short, brutal, and honest, much like life itself in the domains of chaos. Stay sane if you can, and pray you never find yourself gazing at a sky that rains blood over a land of nightmares. Because on a demon world, that's just the everyday weather forecast. Welcome to hell, and mind the demon on your way out, if there is one.